Blog Talk Radio.
And what a way to start our Big Ten preview show here on College Football Insiders Radio. I don't care if you're a Buckeye. I don't care if you're a Fighting Irish. You may not admit it in public. You may not even admit it to yourself, but deep down, you like that fight song. I am Daniel Moglione, and as I said, this is the Big Ten preview show brought to you by College Football Insiders and powered by All Access Football. With me today is our Big Ten insider, John Sears, who will be traveling all over Big Ten country this season, just as he did last year. So if you're out there in Champaign, if you're out there in Madison, keep out a lookout because John Sears will be around the corner talking some college football. John, what's up? How's it going today?
Danny, how are you? I thought we messed up and we're doing the Michigan hour, but I'll take that. That's we love the fight song. So
it's exactly, one of the best, man. I know you're down on your Wolverines. And I understand, you know, things are not going well there, but the fight song is always and will always be a classic.
Oh, fight song will always be good. Always be good, no matter
now,
what.
The football team, we'll see about that. I don't know how good the actual Maize and Blue will be, but the fight song is definitely there. So, you know, where do you want to start, John? Let's get right into it. The season is about to begin tomorrow. Obviously, the college football season as a whole started last night, and LeGarrette Blount got everybody into it with you know, his little punch there at the end of the game. But the Big Ten, you know, the Big Ten is too big to play on Thursday night, right, John? So they start on Saturdays.
Well, hey, Big Ten's undefeated so far, so Indiana gave us their good start. So, yeah, they're usually too big for Thursdays, but not this year, I guess. So, but
Did I just exclude Indiana from the Big Ten? Are they number 11 then?
I'm letting it slide. It's all right. You don't have to give love to the Big Ten all the time. It's all right. We're going to build up respect one game at a time. So Indiana took care of business, and that's all we needed from them last night. So.
All right. Well, let's get right into it with the favorites and the teams to beat in this conference. You know, everywhere you go, you hear it's Ohio State, Penn State. That's the two teams that it's going to come down to. That's the matchup it's going to come down to. That was the case last year when Penn State knocked off the Buckeyes, helped by a Terrell Pryor ill-advised run. You know, he could have had a first down, and it looked like Ohio State was going to hold on, but he tried to make a big play rather than the play they needed to be made. The kid ends up fumbling the football, and Penn State takes over and wins the game and rolls to a Big Ten title. Is that how you see it? Do you see it coming down to these two teams once again?
I think the long and short of it is, yes, it'll most likely be Penn State and Ohio State as the perennial powers, but I think I'm really looking forward to the depth this year, maybe more so in the past few years, only because I think Iowa, Michigan State, Minnesota, Northwestern are on the verge of putting together really solid teams that, albeit they are going to be flawed, but I think there's a lot more depth at the top of the conference than what maybe we're used to seeing. So I think at the end we're going to have a two-horse race, possibly Michigan State coming through and making things interesting. But at least I'm looking forward to see that the middle of the conference is going to show up a little bit stronger this year. And I think altogether the Big Ten is going to be a little bit of a better conference than last year.
All right, and if you're listening, the call-in number is 347-945-6275. If you have any questions on the Big Ten, if you want to tell us why the Big Ten is back or why you're tired of seeing the Big Ten playing in both games, by all means, dial us up and chime in. John, so who are you going with then? The bottom line is, I agree with you, the Big Ten is deeper. I think the middle to the back end is going to be a lot stronger this year. A lot of those teams, I think very few teams in that belly of the conference are going to regress. You're going to see more teams getting better this season. But at the end of the day, your favorites remain Ohio State, Penn State. I think we're going to differ on this one. Actually, we know we're going to differ on this one. Who you got winning it?
Well, we differ on a lot of things, and it's just because of your lack of education, and that's okay. I don't hold it against you. So I'm taking Penn State, finishing 11-1. I think if you look at their schedule, it's very, very light. Their non-conference is almost laughable with Akron, Syracuse, Temple, and Eastern Illinois filling up the non-conference schedule. They get Iowa at home. I think their stumbling block will be at Illinois, and then you're looking at Minnesota at home, at Michigan. Michigan is going to be a wild card. At Northwestern is going to be a tough one on Halloween, and they've always had a tough go at it recently against the Wildcats up in Evanston. And then Ohio State comes to town, and then Indiana at Michigan State. So I think if all things look how I predicted, I think Penn State will secure up their defensive woes in the secondary, and their receiving core will develop enough to hold off the late push with Ohio State and Michigan State in the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season. So I think Penn State's the team to beat.
Did you say almost laughable with that out-of-conference schedule? I mean, I was waiting to see, you know, the Little Sisters of the Poor from Happy Valley on that list. What happened? They were booked this year. They couldn't get them on the
Hey! Don't blame them. Don't blame them for putting the cream puff schedule. They're doing what makes sense and what puts you in championship games. It's not about beating the big opponents. It's about going undefeated. So we never said that you win the Big Ten by beating Akron, Syracuse, and Temple. We just said you make it to the national championship when you beat your non-conference schedule and then sweep in the Big Ten. So I hear you. It doesn't necessarily. I'm not saying they're going to be national champions. I'm going to say though that they're going to run the table and they're going to be in good shape coming into the Big Ten conference. And then I think they have enough weapons to do some good things against the Big Ten schedule. Now I will say though, I think they have to adapt to the talent around them, and if they don't do that, then I think they'll come into problems. And particularly what I'm speaking about is their receiving core is a little bit young and inexperienced. And so I would really like to see Penn State get a little bit more smash mouth this year. They have Darryl Clark running the ball and Stephon Green, Evan Royster, of course, and Brandon Beecham, three-headed monster in the backfield. I think they could have a really strong year running the ball and playing really good run defense. And I think that will be their recipe for success.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the running game there. Two-punch, I think Mr. Green is going to have a better year. You know, he's somebody that had a lot of expectations last year, didn't really do that much as people had envisioned for him. I think he's really going to take off this year. And, you know, with Royster kind of wearing the defense down, I could see Green coming in and giving a lot of big plays. At the same time, though, you're replacing a lot of players along the offensive line. You're replacing, you know, I believe, three all Big Ten players along the offensive line. You're replacing three out of your four all-time leading wide receivers. I'm talking about all-time leading wide receivers. I think Bobby Engram is the other guy in that group. So there's a lot of players to replace offensively. You know, you have a center going, an A.Q. Shipley, who's been there seemingly forever. Your left tackle and Gerald Cadogan. These are a lot of pieces we're missing. And then defensively, you lose your entire secondary and your top three defensive ends, including a pass-rushing demon in Aaron Maben. That's a lot of talent to replace, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. But I think on the offensive side, and this is somewhat of a leap of faith more than it is a statistical reason, but the offensive line, when was the last time you said, man, Penn State just has a horrible offensive line? So I think when we give the benefit of the doubt to Ohio State.
How about that 4-8 season?
Huh?
How about that 4-8 season a couple years ago?
Don't worry. We're not talking about 4-8. I'm not here to talk about the past. No, but I guess my point being that we often give the benefit of the doubt to Ohio State and say, oh, they'll reload, and then that's end of story. And I think for Penn State, you can say the same thing, that I think they don't get as much of a benefit of the doubt because their recruiting tactics aren't to go after the marquee names. Joe Powell will be the first one to tell you he doesn't look at, you know, how many stars and all that kind of stuff. So I think when we look at them and say, oh, well, they didn't recruit four-star guys on the line and they graduated three all Big Ten guys, they're not going to be able to reload. But I don't think that's the case. And Aaron Maben came out of nowhere. So who's to say that on the defensive end side that someone's not going to step up and, you know, Jack Crawford or who else? Anyone down the line could Kevin Latham, Kevin Latham, I don't know, but I don't know who can necessarily have that promise to shine, but Aaron Maben came out, played awesome, but really came out of nowhere. So there, it's not unprecedented that they can reload and have people step up.
I'll give you that. That's fair. That's a fair point, and that's a good point in that play. I think that the player development, coaching them up basically, is going to be the key to this year's unit. And as you mentioned before last year, not only Aaron Maben, but you could throw Navarro Bowman into that mix. They weren't really household names around the country, probably not even in Big Ten country, and they were basically the two key components to that defense last year. So I will give you that. I still think it's a lot to replace, and I think they are going to take a step back. That's just my take on this season, and that's why I'm going to have to go with, you know, the Ohio State Buckeyes to win the Big Ten.
The unintelligent decision of the year.
I think it's going to be Mr. Sweater Vest. He's going to get him back on top. They're going to knock off and avenge their loss to USC. They're going to protect their house, the horseshoe, in week two next week and kind of catapult them into the national title picture. I think Mr. Terrell Pryor is ready to take off. And you're right. They're losing basically as many guys on offense as Penn State is. But I think the one difference is, you know, not to say that Pryor is better than Clark, not especially not this year, but I don't really see Clark taking a step up. I think Pryor does have a chance to take a big leap in his ability and game management from freshman, true freshman to his sophomore season. And while they're not completely proven, you know, we've seen Dan Boomharin play. We've seen Brandon Sain play. We've even seen a little bit of Davier Posey play at the end of last season. So we've seen some of these guys play who are going to step into bigger roles, and they do have, you know, three guys back along the offensive line, which I think is huge, including a former Michigan man, Justin Bourne, that I think will solidify that line. Their center, Mike Brewster, is just a sophomore. He started as a true freshman. I think that was kind of underpublicized a lot because of Mr. Pryor as a true freshman at quarterback, but not many true freshmen start at centers, particularly at a program like Ohio State. So I think the Buckeyes, as I said, are the team to beat defensively. You have Cameron and Hayward and Thaddeus Gibson leading that offensive line. I think, you know, ideal complementary bookends. Hayward's a guy that can play defensive tackle on most teams, about almost 290 pounds, while Gibson is more of that hybrid outside linebacker pass rushing guy at 240. They do lose Malcolm Jenkins, but three of the other four guys return in the secondary. I think they'll be solid there. Obviously, the big question mark is replacing Laurinaitis and Freeman in the linebacking core. John, obviously, you don't have them as Big Ten chance, but how high do you think the Buckeyes can go? And if they do knock off USC, do you think they could be, you know, maybe make a run at another BCS title game?
Okay, so I'm going to pump the brakes here a little bit before we're talking BCS title games. So let's go through these six names.
Are you going to pull a Woody? Are you doing a Woody Hayes right before you get into the Michigan border?
Exactly. Deanie Wells, Brian Robiskie, Brian Hartline, Malcolm Jenkins, Marcus Freeman, James Laurinaitis. Gone. Okay. And now you have sophomore quarterback Terrell Pryor, who is obviously a phenom. I want to see him be able to pass the ball. But if you remember last year watching him, he was number one in the conference in passing efficiency. So everyone will say, well, hey, he played great last year. I will definitely say he played great as a freshman. But if you look game by game, the types of throw, the types of offense they set up, and the types of receivers that bailed him out on a lot of passes, I would argue that it was an oversimplified system for Pryor to succeed passing. I don't think they can get away with doing that this year, having an oversimplified system, unless Pryor develops as a passer. Now, the complicating part here is that, yes, we've seen Heron and Sain in the backfields, but we haven't seen them carry a great load. They've come in to give Wells breathers. So I'm not exactly sure that you have the offensive firepower in place clicking right off the bat to be able to take on a USC team. And then walking into a Big Ten season where they're going to face some pretty good defenses. So right off the bat, I'm the question mark for me is who's making the plays on offense for Ohio State. And then on defense, when you lose your one of your lockdown corners and then you lose your two top tacklers, that could leave possibly a lot of holes out in the backside of the defense that I don't know if there's enough to reload every year just like we always say they do. I think we take it for granted that they can, but I think also it's been down seasons for the Big Ten as a whole that Ohio State could get away with that. So I think with all of that, I still see them being at the very worst a three-loss team and at the very best a one-loss team. So we're not saying it's horrible, but in terms of Ohio State national championships, I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think they have more to replace than Penn State does.
Really, you do?
I think so because they've lost all their playmakers on offense, and you have Pryor there,
except the quarterback.
But Darryl Clark comes back though, so you bring your quarterback at Penn State too. So if you're using that same tactic, then Penn State has a better. Better offense going into it, and they have a front seven that I think is going to look like 2006 Michigan, where you shouldn't even bother running the ball against them, and you're going to have to beat them throwing. So it all depends on what happens for Penn State's secondary. So you look at Pryor coming in, Ohio State in Happy Valley with a receiving core that's unproven that would most likely have to beat Penn State on the road passing the ball. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So, and that could be right there is that head-to-head.
You don't think though that Pryor is going to make a bigger leap than improvement than Clark is? I mean, do you think Clark is going to get better this year, losing his wide receiver weapons, three guys? I mean, basically those backups were non-contributors last year, so they're completely unproven. I feel far more than Ohio State running backs. I just think Pryor has a big window to get better. And I agree with you. He's not going to be a great passer. He's not going to turn suddenly into Tom Brady. But let's not forget, Vince Young didn't just suddenly struggle as a passer when he came to the NFL. He wasn't the most polished passer when he was in college. But when you have a guy that could run the way he can run, the way Terrell Pryor can run, it affects how the defenses play. And those DBs are constantly looking forward, looking at the quarterback. And the second he breaks out of the pocket, those guys are going to start running up, which is going to leave receivers completely wide open, where the quarterback doesn't necessarily have to have pinpoint accuracy or great touch on the ball, which is why Pryor's numbers in terms of efficiency, quote-unquote efficiency, were good, even though he didn't look pretty.
I agree. It's not a beauty contest for Pryor at all. I absolutely agree with you about that. But the thing that you're saying about Pryor's ability to break down plays, I think Penn State edges them. If we're talking specifically that the Big Ten season will anchor on that matchup, if we want to get into specifics, you have Navarro Bowne, Sean Lee, and Josh Hull, who are your linebackers that potentially have the ability to contain Terrell Pryor better than any other team that he'll face this whole year. So if there is a team that has the ability to contain Pryor, which they showed that they could do it last year, I think it's Penn State. And, yes, they can make plays. The secondary has to improve. But remember, 2006, Penn State replaced their entire secondary just like they're doing now, and they were just fine. So there's a lot of question marks here. I think Darryl Clark does not need to improve as much as Terrell Pryor does because Clark has a running game that he can just hand the ball off to several different people. They can play more of a possession, short passing game, more so than I think that Ohio State can because you have an Evan Royster. You have Stephon Green who showed the ability to make big plays off of screen passes. So that gives you another option that you don't necessarily have to be looking for receivers as much as perhaps Ohio State does.
Well, I have to mention also that I think the 2005 secondary probably wasn't that good, as good as last year's was. So going into 2006, that might have been a good thing. And they also did have a kid named King, right, who was the number one recruiter in the country that stepped in and played well. All right, obviously we're not going to agree on this topic, and it's going to be a while until they face each other, and we'll find the ultimate winner in that. We will get a glimpse of Ohio State next week and see how they handle a big boy team like USC, who, you know, people are forgetting, lost about, you know, 8 key guys to it, to that defense, and they're going to be the ones sending a freshman quarterback into the Lions' den or the Buckeyes' den this time around. Let's get into other teams that could contend for a Big Ten title. You know who my hot team is this year? That's the Iowa Hawkeyes, and they have been already served a major blow with Jewel Hampton out for the season. This kid, I think, was going to be a breakout player in the Big Ten, ran for over 500 yards, scored a decent amount of touchdowns considering the amount of carries that Sean Green got as a, you know, and he did it as a freshman. I thought he was primed to break out, and now he's out for the year. So I think that's a pretty big blow. Who else other than Iowa could be a potential challenger to the big two favorites in this conference?
Well, I'm really disappointed with Hampton's injury going down for Iowa, because I think that really hurts their chances. And again, when my whole thing of covering the Big Ten is seeing the conference do better as a whole, and this is a blow for the conference, because I think Iowa had really good expectations coming into the season. If Hampton comes in and gives half the stats that Sean Green gave them last year, they're contending for the Big Ten title, and they're just making it a deeper class within the entire conference. So it's really sad to see that Hampton's out. I hope that Iowa can find a good replacement, and it won't stunt their season too much. I'm actually a little bit high on Illinois. I know that you're not. They're a wild.
That's not true.
Well, I think we have a little bit disparaging differences here. I think I look at Illinois. They have a potential to really shake things up this year in the conference. The one thing about the Illini that I'm always concerned about is they have a way of not being able to string together wins or recover well after a tough loss. So the leadership has to be there this year, and I think they can't implode at any point. Obviously, no team can afford to implode at any point in the season, but I really think Illinois has a decent shot with the type of offense they're going to be putting out to make some noise here. And I actually have them making a couple of upsets against, like I said, I had them originally with playing Penn State, that they're going to beat Penn State, and that's going to be Penn State's loss because of that secondary problem. And with Juice Williams coming in and having a tremendous receiving core and potentially knocking off or ending up, it's going to be a good swing game with Ohio State that they could potentially knock off the Buckeyes early in the season as well.
Yeah, no, I'm not as high on Illinois as you are. I have them fifth in the conference heading into the year, but I don't disagree with the potential. My two concerns are, one, the defense. They were very disappointing last year, and they lose Miller in the middle, and they lose Vontae Davis. It's time for guys like Martez Wilson and a lot of these other highly touted guys that, you know, have those 4 and 5 stars next to their names. It's time for some of those guys to step up and play. Wilson was the guy that I was extremely disappointed in last season. And, you know, let's be honest, I don't want to be too down on the guy, but, you know, other than 2 years ago, when's the last time a Ron Zook team fulfilled their promise and fulfilled their potential?
No, I know, and that's the struggle. So that's why when I was going through the analysis of the Illini this year, I really thought that their potential would weigh a lot on Juice Williams. Of course, it lands on the quarterback's arms and shoulders, but I think he really needs to make a nice leap with his touchdown to interception ratio, because it's been pretty much flat around 500 for his career. And so I think turnovers have killed them traditionally, and we saw that last year with the Minnesota game, for instance. I think that the consistency would have to be there if Juice can give them a really nice season with cutting down on interceptions. And then also they're going to have a new left tackle coming in, Jeff Allen, who is a true sophomore. So I'm worried about that backside protection. So if that stands up as well, I think they have a chance to really put up some points. And I think this is going to be the classic. They need to just outscore them until the bitter end, because I'm not sure their defense is quite solid, but I think in general they have enough talent around them offensively to make some noise and make some really big upsets.
All right, let's talk a little bit about my Hawkeyes. And even though Hampton's not there and they're going to have to play Sean Green, it was funny, I was watching the Big Ten preview, and they were talking about how last year the big question mark with Iowa was running back, and then Sean Green came out of nowhere. I think why they would still have a very solid running game is that offensive line. You know, whether it's Coach Ferentz, whether it's back in the day with Hayden Fry, the staple of a top Iowa team is, you know, that corn-fed, big, burly offensive lineman. And I think Brian Bulaga is going to be among the best in the country at left tackle. I think they're going to have one of the better offensive lines, maybe the best offensive line in the Big Ten, you know, going from left to right across the board. And I think that's going to be huge. If you have a dominant offensive line, you're going to be able to run the football. I think Stanzi is going to progress as a quarterback. You know, he's never going to be a guy like a Pryor or a Clark where you're going to say, hey, buddy, put us on your shoulders, win the game for us. But he's a game manager, and he's already proven he can win big games by knocking off a team like Penn State last year. I think the one question mark I have on offense is, you know, they have talented guys in Tony Moaki, the tight end, Daryl Johnson, Koulianos, the wide receiver, but these guys never seem to put it together on a consistent basis. And defensively, they return 8 guys. Obviously the guys they lose were key, but I think their back 7 is as good as any in the Big Ten. I love Paul Anger, the linebacker. The other 2 guys are pretty solid as well. I think a key guy to step up in the secondary is Amari Spivey, the corner. He might be one of the better, if not the best, DB in the Big Ten. Remember that name. He's going to be a key contributor. Now, obviously, the big question mark defensively is replacing King and Kroll, the 2 guys at defensive tackle that have been starters for a couple of years. They're not going to be easy to replace, but they do have guys with some experience. I mean, junior Carl Klug played well when given the opportunity last year, and Mike Daniels, who's a sophomore, was good enough to find some playing time as a freshman behind those 3. So I think, you know, the cupboard really isn't empty there. I really like Iowa as my sleeper team. I got them 2nd place in the Big Ten ahead of your Nittany Lions. And even with Hampton out, I'm going to stick to that pick.
Yeah, I think you're crazy. So they have to go on.
What else is new?
On the road, Happy Valley, Camp Randall, Lansing, Columbus. That's 4 road games that in the conference that if they have to win 3 out of 4 of those to contend. And I understand.
Obviously picking them, I wasn't the one who made the schedule. And I hear what you're saying. The schedule is extremely challenging. I'm not trying to look at it from that sense at this point of the year. You know what I mean? Even though we're doing quote-unquote predictions, I'm still trying to list them as which team I think is better, you know, regardless of schedule.
Oh, okay, yeah. So regardless of schedule, I think their defense is going to be right up there in the top. I think their offense, had Hampton been there, was going to be solid. I don't think it was going to be not Illinois grade, but I think they would have been easily putting up 28 to 30 points a game, somewhere around there. And so the biggest question mark there was the interior of both offensive and defensive line. So my biggest question mark when I was first looking at them was, okay, who's going to run? Who are they going to play that's going to be really tough up the middle? So I thought they might have struggled against Wisconsin if they haven't found good replacements at defensive tackle. And then potentially at Michigan State because they're a good downhill running team, even if they do it by committee, by replacing Ringer. So I had those as losses. And then Penn State being a solid running team as well at Happy Valley to begin the Big Ten play. I thought Penn State was going to get revenge from last year and knock them off as well. So I thought those were 3 possible losses right there. But I think on paper, they do look good. But unfortunately for Iowa, it's not about being good on paper. It's also about matching up how their schedule is laying for them right now. And I think they're a victim of scheduling just as bad as Minnesota is this year, that they can be improved or as good as last year and take a couple steps back.
No, I agree totally with that. And there's one more team, let's not leave them out, that I think both of us like to some extent. I have them ranked in my top 25. You have them as a contender. They're coming in at 21 on College Football Insider's top 25 preseason countdown, which you can check out at NFLDraftBible.com. We have unveiled up to number 2 Oklahoma Sooners. And, you know, obviously if you read it, you know Florida is going to be number 1. That's going to be up later today. But Michigan State is 1 of 4. Big Ten teams that have cracked the top 25. Illinois is the one team that's just on the outside. Honestly, Illinois might be team number 26 for me. But let's get to the Spartans and what you think they could do. Obviously, the big keys here are replacing quarterback Brian Hoyer and running back Javon Ringer, who basically, what did he have, about, you know, 50 carries every game last year?
Yeah, 50 carries for 3.3 yards per carry. for 150 yards. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. We look at Ringer as a very celebrated collegiate player, and he was. But you also look at, so for their season going 9-3, they averaged as a team under 4 yards a carry, well under at 3.3 as a team, and that's really not going to cut it. So I think they have the talent coming in to be able to replace Ringer to an extent. So what Ringer was also good about was putting the ball in the end zone, and that'll be a particular question. So I think the running game will be there, and like I said, traditionally Michigan State's been really good about using multiple running backs to carry the running game. I think with Kirk Cousins and Keith Nichol battling it out, I know that we have a named starter in Cousins for opening day, that I think they're going to push each other through the season, that I think they're actually going to be solid, and I don't think replacing Brian Hoyer, no offense to him, is going to be as challenging as it would seem to say, well, we lost our graduating quarterback, and now how do we replace him? So they have a really good receiving trio out there. I think the offense is going to be really good, and then you match that up with a really nice defense led by Greg Jones, who I've predicted to be the defensive player of the year, edging out, I think, Anger from Iowa, like you had brought up. I think they're going to be really solid. I think the defensive line play is going to be there, linebackers are going to be there, and the secondary is going to be strong. That they actually, to me, I look at me choosing Michigan State, how you were looking at Iowa, that Michigan State had all the pieces together just as much as Iowa did, so I actually thought that Michigan State would be the better team this year, especially with their schedule.
Yeah, John, I mean, Michigan State is pretty close. I think, you know, their coach has done a great job there, D'Antonio. I remember speaking in his first season to J.U. Culcrick, and, you know, he didn't want to disparage the previous regime, but you could see he was happy about the direction and the discipline and the accountability that the new coaching staff have brought in. I think, you know, those days of Michigan State kind of being that disappointing team, that team that starts off 5-0 and finishes 6-6, that team that as soon as they have one bad loss, they collapse, it's over. And I agree. I don't think replacing the big names Hoyer and Ringer are going to be that hard. I actually think the key to the offense is going to be how the offensive line plays. If the offensive line plays well, they're going to run the football. They have talent in the backfield. And as you mentioned, very talented receiving core, very talented tight end core led by Charlie Gant. So, and the quarterbacks could throw the football. They have more physical ability than Brian Hoyer does. So I think if the offensive line plays well as a unit, this is going to be an improved offense. And defensively, they have 8 guys back. It's hard for me to argue against Greg Jones. I think Eric Gordon's another good player. Charles Rucker in the secondary, a solid corner. So I think definitely the Spartans are right there. And I'm with you. I mean, they're knocking off Penn State in the season finale, right?
You're killing me here. You are absolutely killing me. I think actually, you know, I have that as one of my swing games for. So if I run down the schedule real quickly, so they start off Montana State, Central Michigan. I think they should be just fine there. Notre Dame is a swing game. I think that game is actually one of the largest in all of the Big Ten schedule. So obviously USC, Ohio State, but that game. Really, the Big Ten needs this game. Again, if we're talking about the reputation and how good this conference is going to be, how deep this conference is going to be, Michigan State has to be a BCS-grade opponent that Notre Dame has the potential to be. I'm not saying they are. I'm not Lou Holtz. But I think Notre Dame has some weapons, and they're going to be improved from last year. But I think that's a really, really big game for Michigan State to come off strong. I have them actually losing that game. Only because I'm just fearful that Jimmy Clausen might be at the verge of breaking out, and they have a really good receiving core that I think they might have a shot at it, particularly as well on the other side of the ball with Tenuta throwing some zone blitzes at the inexperienced quarterbacks that they might confuse them as early as week 3 in the season. I think that's the high potential. But then they go at Wisconsin. I think they'll be fine there. Michigan, I actually have them losing to Michigan. I had to find some ways to give Michigan some love this season. I think when you have a rivalry game, I think you can give a little bit more leniency to the underdog, which Michigan will certainly be going into this game, even at home. But But I think Michigan is going to find a way to edge them, which I think is going to disappoint a lot of people in Spartyville. But then I think they have a chance to knock off Illinois, Northwestern, Iowa, Minnesota in a very tough stretch of, I think, that those second-tier teams that are going to should be very strong, and then Western Michigan and Purdue, and then finishing off that game in Lansing against Penn State. So I have them looking at a nice 9-3 season. I think potentially they're vying for the Big Ten championship, and it's just how those swing games fall into place for them.
Well, I think the one thing that I'm looking for this team to do, and they still haven't done, is win that big game. You know what I mean? It seems like whenever they take on that big foe, they fall short, and last year was no different. You know, the aggregate score against Ohio State and Penn State was 94-25. I think if they win one of those games, get that signature-type win, that could be the real sign that Michigan State is the team to contend with in the Big Ten. John, we've kind of – I think we've definitely hit the best five teams in this conference. What other teams do you think, you know, unless you think there's another team that can really be a sleeper for the Big Ten title? I know you mentioned Northwestern, but I don't think they're a real legitimate sleeper to win it. They may finish higher than some of these teams, but I don't think they're a real team that could take number one. But what other teams can make a bowl game this year?
Well, yeah, so I think Northwestern's more of the Rip Van Winkle of the conference. I think they have a lot of question marks on offense, maybe too many. We're just uncertain. There's a lot of unproven players that need to step up. The defense is going to be, I think, really solid, and I think that's something that could possibly carry them. So it all depends how Kafka runs the offense and if some receivers can step up, as well as they need a go-to running back as well. So Northwestern's going to have I think they're going to have a solid season, but I think it's a step back for them. I think Minnesota, you know, I really want Minnesota to do well. I don't know why. I think I like what Minnesota has in place. I like their recruiting. I'm a big fan of Adam Weber. If he followed me last year, there's no surprise there. But I really like what they're doing up in Minneapolis, and I think they have a shot to make some noise. It's just really unfortunate that their schedule plays out the way it does. So they have Cal for non-conference. They have on the road at Penn State, followed by on the road at Ohio State, followed by hosting Michigan State, followed by Illinois in a four-week stretch in the middle of October that will pretty much is gonna dictate their season, and then finishing up at Iowa, where they got absolutely embarrassed last year, 55-0, I think it was. I think their schedule is just horrible, but so they're a team that's going to improve and take a step back in the record. So that's going to be unfortunate for them, but I'm really looking to the Weber-Decker connection. I think Bennett coming back off injury will give them a boost in the running game. They're committing to being a more physical type style on offense, switching from the spread, so that's a little bit of a wild card for them as well, because that's what happened in the Iowa game last year. They switched mid-season to a more pro-style type offense and got their teeth punched in. So it's going to be tough for them, but if the transition works, I think they have a lot of tools in place to be solid. So definitely Minnesota, Northwestern. Wisconsin's another team that potentially has a good shake at it as well, but they have a lot of question marks on defense as well. So what are you thinking for these teams?
Well, I was waiting for you to say Minnesota's got to play Syracuse. I thought you were going to make my brother happy, who's an alum. He graduated from Syracuse last spring. I thought you were going to make him happy by saying, you know, tough game at the Dome. They're going down to the Orange.
Oh, with Greg Paulus dribbling around in the backfield? I don't know about that.
So bounce passes aren't good in this sport, right?
I think so. I think that counts as an incomplete. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. He's pumped up for this one. Yeah, he can't wait to watch it. You know, like I said, first game as a Cuse alum. I don't know how long we're going to be watching. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Palace playing makes it somewhat of an interesting game. I kind of agree with you with Minnesota. I want to see them keep the momentum going. I'm just not sold, though. I don't know why. I have a feeling they're going to take a little bit of a step back this season, kind of like Illinois did. And the way I look at it is that, you know, you have Illinois as a team who didn't make a bowl last year, who I think we both, you know, think are pretty, you know, safe bets to make a bowl this year. And then I also think Michigan's going to find a way to sneak in and get about 7 wins. They work hard enough. They should get at least 7 wins, right?
So let's put that Michigan thing on pause, because that's room for a 4-hour debate. But just back to Minnesota, though. The thing about
my point is, I think, you know, if two teams are going to step up, John, that means somebody's got to step back, and I think Minnesota is the more likely team. I hear you with your question marks on Northwestern offensively, but man, has Northwestern ever returned this much talent on defense? They have a legitimate top Big Ten defense with my man Pat Fitzgerald on, who, by the way, I aired an interview with him this morning, so don't forget to check that on College Football Insiders Radio and All Access Football Radio, a little Q&A with Pat Fitzgerald, who was elected and inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame for his days as a linebacker in the Big Ten. Go ahead, John, tell me why Minnesota will make a bowl.
Well, the thing about it, I think they'll make a bowl. I think I have them at 7-5 and pretty much losing that 4-week stretch, because Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State are all going to be contending, as well as Illinois. The thing about Minnesota, though, is that they were 7-5 last year before their bowl game. I don't see 7-5 this year as a step back. I think 7-5 this year, if they show improvements, will actually be an improvement from last year, because their schedule is tougher. So I don't think comparing this to an Illinois team where they had the talent in place and they played down where their talent should have had them in better places, I think that's a little bit of a different scenario. So I just wanted to make that case that I really think that even if Minnesota's record is the same, 7-5, 6-6, 8-4, I think they're fine and they're on their way. It's just that they're installing a new offense, and a brutal schedule this year may not give them the numbers that at the end of the season Gopher fans would like to see, but I think they're on their way up, so we'll see about that.
All right, let's get to those Wolverines.
All right.
I think they're going bowling, John. I know you're very down on them. I know you don't. I don't know if it's because you don't want to get your hopes up, or you're a pessimistic fan there when it comes to the maize and blue. But this is my take. In a general picture, I mean, this is a team that was in it year in and year out, you know, for under Lloyd Carr as a contending team. You know, obviously they disappointed a lot, struggled against Ohio State, probably cost them his job. But, you know, suddenly the talent didn't drop off this much. I think it's another year under this system. I think they finally may have a quarterback in Forcier that fits this scheme. I mean, obviously the guys that were there last year, simply Threed and Sheridan, are not running quarterbacks. They're nothing in the realm of a Pat White. And I'm not saying this kid's going to be Pat White, but can he be Pat White-esque for a certain amount of games, for enough? Obviously he's going to have the stinkers, and they may have some games where they get spanked and get knocked out of the stadium in the first quarter. But I think he's going to have enough moments where he shines and they're going to do well. And let's not forget, I mean, 7-5 is still a darn right terrible season in Michigan. I mean, it's not like 7-5 they're going to throw a parade for Rich Rodriguez in Ann Arbor.
No, I agree with that. But I think, you know, for all the points you stated before about the Lloyd Carr era and such, I think you have to throw all of that aside, because you have to look at this a little bit differently. That this is a new regime. This is the first time a non-Bo descendant has taken over the reins for the team. So all of those records and that, well, they just reload and they do well year in and year out, I think that's because the coaching staff was installed and it just kept replacing itself with similar type of people. When you come in, you bring in a brand new offense, and now they're bringing in their third defense in 3 years, third defensive coordinator, so now they're switching to the 3-3-5. Now you have a brand new offense and a brand new defense. Rich Rod has a year under his belt. He has recruited some of his players, so I think they're going to be better offensively than they were last year. The question mark is, though, what's going to happen to the defense? So you lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, and on top of that, you're trying to switch to a new scheme again where your players don't exactly fit the stack to the way that you would like it after 4 years of recruiting. So you have a lot of position changes. I'm just not convinced of that, on top of having a freshman quarterback starting for you. So remember, you're saying that Sheridan wasn't the guy, but remember, through training camp this year, Sheridan and Forcier were neck and neck up until Rich Rod had announced Forcier the starter just this week. So to me, that isn't quite where I would like to see the Michigan team be heading into opening day tomorrow. So with all of that taken together, I think there's a lot of risk there, and their schedule lays out in a way where I think they have games, the winnable games they should win, but then there's a lot of games that they're swing games where I think they can really lose. And if that's the case, I have them squeezing out 6 wins and eking into a bowl game. I'm a little less optimistic about how much they can keep progressing when there's so much change around them. So let's not forget,
too, they have some nice building blocks on defense, too. A lot of people are down on the defense. I think a lot of programs wouldn't mind having a guy like Brandon Graham at end, move to linebacker, it'd be easy at linebacker, in the secondary corner, Donovan Warren. So, you know, they're not a perfect team by any means. And like I said, I feel like I'm not, you know, am I really raising the bar high by saying 7-5? Ooh, maybe even 8-4. I mean, there were stretches for 10, 15 years where an 8-4 season would be the worst season in that run.
I agree, but again, that's in the middle of stretches where you didn't have changes in the offense or the defense in the ways that we've seen. So how long did Michigan go running pro-style smash-mouth offense, and then a defense, they were in a 4-2-5 for forever, as long as I can remember, but they've always had a 4-man front. And when you have that consistency over and over, and you have the coaching staff that's been there that the players have been comfortable with over and over, it's a little bit different. That sure, yeah, 8-4. Oh my God, what happened? I absolutely agree with that. But I think you can't look at that when you have brand new coaching staff coming in, a whole new regime, more different character. And we've seen that with the loss of some players who said, you know what, this isn't for me. That's going to happen at any program. But I think that there's so much change that you can't just put the stamp of approval that this is Michigan football in Ann Arbor and 8-4 is a bad season for us. I think if it was
I'm not. I'm just using that as an example. I'm not saying 8-4 this year would be a bad year. I'm not saying that, hey, this team can go, this is Michigan and they have, you know, a roster full of 4- and 5-star recruits, which they do. I'm not saying they're going 10-2. I'm saying 7-5, maybe 8-4.
Yeah, I don't see 7 wins. I can't find it. I go through their schedule. I think Western Michigan right off the bat is going to be somewhat challenging because I think although Michigan has they have Boubacar Sissoko and Donovan Warren was a 5-star recruit, but he's been injured. He hasn't played up to his potential. So I think their secondary, they have new safeties rolling in over the top. And you have at Western Michigan, you have Hiller coming in who's a senior quarterback who knows how to run the offense. I think there's a question mark right off the bat. Then it doesn't let up from there. They have Notre Dame with, again, Clawson and their three-headed receiving monster attack, Kyle Rudolph at tight end, that they may have a field day. I mean, the potential is there for Clawson to throw for 400 yards against the Michigan defense if they don't get to him in time. And then
if we look at it as worst case scenario every game, no, they won't get to 7-8 wins. But even last year, we're on a 3-win team. Let's not forget, 2 of their 3 wins were against bowl teams in Wisconsin and Minnesota on the road. So even a team when they went 3-9 was able to rise up and pull off a quote-unquote upset or two. I just think, I'm not telling you I know which game it's going to be. I just think they're going to win 1 or 2 games they're not supposed to. And you actually are telling me a game they're going to win that they're not supposed to win, which is in East Lansing against Michigan State. If they win that game in East Lansing, guaranteed they will win at least 7 games.
I don't think so. I think it's a rivalry game, and I think that's what happened last year. They won the Little Brown Jug. They beat Minnesota on the road. The Wisconsin game was just an absolute implosion that the game just ended up falling into their hands, and they almost lost that in the end too. So I think, yeah, 3-9, they won 2 games on the road against bowl teams, but that Minnesota game was a rivalry game. And then the Wisconsin game, I'll give them that. So I think they beat Michigan State because it's a rival, and I think that levels the playing field. But then they go on the road at Iowa, home at Delaware State, home against Penn State, on the road against Illinois. Depending on where Illinois is, if they're a team that implodes on themselves, then, yeah, they might squeeze.
When's the last time Illinois beat Michigan?
Last
year. Big spot. No, at home in a big spot.
But Michigan has to go on the road to play Illinois, where Juice embarrassed them at the Big House with 400 total yards by himself. So I give that a swing game in my calendar here, that there's the potential, depending on what Illinois has showed us up until that point. So that could be a possible win. I have them beating Purdue, and then they have to go to Camp Randall against Wisconsin right before playing Ohio State. So if your boys are going to be in the national title game, that means they're not losing to Michigan, and then that leaves at Wisconsin. And I just don't know there either. With the size of that team has shrunk significantly with their training program and just the players they're starting to recruit. And you go into Wisconsin where their average offensive line is in the order of 6'6", 315. And a running back who looks like Brandon Jacobs wearing Wisconsin uniform. So I just look at their schedule, and I understand you're saying at the talent, they should have 7 wins, but in reality, when you actually look at the schedule, I can't find those wins. I can find 6, maybe. And maybe it won't be Michigan State. Maybe it'll be Illinois. Maybe it'll be Penn State. Maybe it'll be Ohio State. But I can't see them doing it, having lightning strike twice for their schedule. It's just, it's not there.
All right, John, we got less than 10 minutes left, and before we close it out here, I want to get into some of the conference players of the year, and, you know, I didn't give them a little love with the fight song earlier, but we're going to give a little love for Juice Williams right now as one of your favorites for offensive player of the year. We go. A little love for your Fighting Illini and one of your top contenders for Offensive Player of the Year, along with John, a.k.a. Brandon Jacobs Clay with Wisconsin. We're hoping he's going to be more reminiscent of Brandon Jacobs than another former Badger who played for the Big Blue, Ron Dane, in his pro days, don't we?
Oh, man, if that wasn't a disappointment all over the board for being a Giants fan over here. I know you reveled in it being a Jets fan, but that's all right. For Juice, so as I alluded to before, I think that the touchdown interception thing is my biggest question mark for him having a really great season this year. But it's so surprising that when you think of total yards in the Big Ten all time, Drew Brees, and then potentially Juice Williams surpassing him this year with 4,238 yards. That's really amazing because you look back at Drew Brees' career, and sure, he did most of that through the air, but it's just amazing thinking of Juice Williams, watching him develop over time where he started, 40% completion percentage his freshman year, and just has built up. He was top two leading rusher for Illinois last year, has the ability, has so much gifted talent that it's just amazing to see what he's accomplished over 3 years. What's a little disappointing is that his career high completion percentage is 57.5%, but like I said, he does it by a combination of passing and running. 3,173 yards last year, 923 leading Illinois in rushing. I don't think he's going to rush the ball as much this year. I think they have too many offensive weapons with obviously Aurelius Ben, Jeff Cumberland, and then they had a transfer from Florida, Jared Faison, who I'm really excited to see what he can do in the Big Ten. That's a ridiculous trio for Juice to pick apart some defenses. I think it'll free up a little bit more room perhaps for Ben, or Ben keeps getting double teamed and it leaves Cumberland or Faison open for I think a lot more passing lanes that Williams can maybe complete, maybe eclipse 60% passing completion percentage this year. So I think I'm expecting a big year from him if he falls into that trap of the interceptions. So 2008, he was 22 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, 12 and 13 in 07, and 9-9 in 06. So we see that trend there that as much good as he does, he can give the ball up as well. If he trims those interceptions in half, I think, look out, Juice is going to have a really great season, and that's what's going to launch them into contention this year.
All right, now let's move from offense to defense. You mentioned the name earlier, Greg Jones, as your defensive player of the year. Who else could potentially throw their hat into that ring?
Yeah, so I'm giving love to the linebackers this year. So I think Greg Jones, he had 127 tackles, 12 for loss last year. I think this year their defense is going to pick it up a little bit, where he's going to be a little bit more involved in the backfield a little bit more, and especially the type of schedule they have. I think he's playing the type of opponents where he can really flourish. Pat Anger, of course, is going to be, I think he's going to be right up there. And also, as you had alluded to, Navarro Bowman, I think, might have a really good season. We'll see how Sean Lee does coming back from injury. So there's definitely the possibility from the linebacking core. We can't forget Brandon Graham and Corey Wooten at defensive ends. If Wooten comes back from his knee injury and looks as good as he did last year, he could have a monster year, as well as Brandon Graham. He can start breaking some more of Michigan's records with from sacks. But it all depends on what Graham and Wooten can do facing double and triple teams this year if they step their game up. So I think Graham has a decent chance at it with a strong play from Mike Martin in the interior. I have him being a breakout player for Michigan and for the Big Ten this year at the defensive tackle position, just from what he did last year and his progression through the spring this year. So I think Graham has help around him to maybe give him another solid year. So I think it's going to be a linebacker that takes defensive player of the year in the Big Ten, but possibly a defensive end as well.
Yeah, I like Mr. Wooten there in Northwestern. As long as he comes back healthy, he is a man of alignment, and he's definitely a contender for that award. Probably would have left for the NFL if he was 100% after last season. Now, John, you know, this week's games really aren't that, you know, exciting, thrilling, use whatever word you want, in conference play. I mean, you know, for Big Ten play. But there are some big games in September. And we have your column up, the September start on NFLDraftBible.com. I suggest people check that out. We have Redemption Week on September 12th. We have September 19th is RESPECT Week, and that means the Spartans and Minnesota need to represent the Big Ten Conference. And then spoiler alert, on September 26th, where Big Ten play begins, let's get into some of those potential spoiler games that you see happening later in the month that could have impact, you know, for the entire season.
Yeah, so September 26th is, mark that on your calendar. This is going to be a really interesting week. So, again, this is Illinois going to Columbus against Ohio State, and Illinois has played Ohio State tough the last 4 years, if I recall. Juice did it himself in 2007 in Columbus. If you remember that game, that's where Ohio State didn't see the ball for the last 8 minutes and 9 seconds of the game. Juice kept converting third downs, and he had 4 touchdown passes, I think, in that game as well. So that's going to be a really nice toe-to-toe battle to start it off. We'd like to see how, obviously, the offense, Illinois' offense goes, and then obviously what the progression of Pryor and et al. Is for Ohio State. And then second, we have Iowa at Penn State. This is the rematch from last year that happened at night in Iowa City, where Penn State was upset on a last-second field goal. Now it's back to Happy Valley, night game. So, you know, you got to give the student section, you got to give Happy Valley themselves an advantage, a one-up advantage on anyone coming into town, and in particular when it's at night. I'll be at that game, so I'll give you a nice rehash of that. But I think that's a really interesting game there as well. So who steps up early in the season for the Big Ten is really going to make a splash for themselves for the rest of the conference. I threw this in here only because of
I can hear Brett Musburger right now. It's gonna be a whiteout in Happy Valley for Joe Pa and the Nittany Lions.
Here come the Hawkeyes.
Well, we got a little over a minute left to go in the show. So quickly, since you like to see the Big Ten do well, you know, are you going to be wearing your Steve Belisari jersey and, you know, your Buckeye necklace around your neck next week when they take on USC to kind of represent the conference?
I'm hoping. I really am. It's I think, you know, what's really going to be interesting about this is the role reversal. Last year, Pryor walking into the Coliseum as a true freshman starting and really being unwelcome there. How it's returned with Matt Barkley being the true freshman pulling the reins for USC in Columbus. I think there's a lot of losses on the defensive side of the ball, but remember, Taylor Mays is a ball hawk out in the secondary, and if Pryor leaves one of those balls floating around like he's known to do, then I think Mays takes advantage of it. So I think it's going to be a little bit closer than last year. I'm skeptical of Ohio State's chances because of the laundry list of question marks I have for him, but I'm hoping for him. I don't think I'm wearing Belisari. I may go with Andy Katzenmoyer.
I like that. All right, this is the Big Ten Preview Show brought to you by College Football Insiders, powered by All Access Football. Thanks for joining us, and fight on, State.